My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Every generation has its thought leaders who leave an indelible mark on the world. Born of their personal pain, experience, and life lessons, these leaders rise to bring wisdom and light so that others may benefit, heal, and grow. Our generation was blessed with the enduring wisdom and presence of Debbie Ford. Debbie was a beloved spiritual teacher, New York Times bestselling author of more than 10 books. Her first masterpiece, The Dark Side of the Light Chasers, transformed the lives of hundreds of thousands of people by showing them how to embrace their shadow selves and find wholeness. Followed by groundbreaking books including Spiritual Divorce, Secret of the Shadow, The Right Questions, Why Good People Do Bad Things, and The Best Year of Your Life, Debbie's literary legacy was thought to be completed with her transition in February 2013. But death was not the end of sharing wisdom for the determined Debbie. Her magic continued when her beloved sister, Ariel Ford, was mystically guided to bring to fruition a book that Debbie wrote sometime in the last years of her earthly adventure. My guest this week on Destination Unlimited is my dear friend Ariel Ford. She joins us to share the story of her sister's amazing life and afterlife. Ariel is the best-selling author of The Soulmate Secret, Wabi Sabi Love, and Turn Your Mate into Your Soulmate. She's also renowned for her work helping to launch the best-selling careers of Deepak Chopra, Marianne Williamson, Neil Donald Walsh, and of course, her little sister, Debbie Ford. Please join me in extending an extra warm Destination Unlimited welcome to my friend, Ariel Ford. Good evening, Ariel.
Hey, Victor, how are you?
I am wonderful, and it is so great to have you. And this is a story that has to be told because we know what magic there is in life, but there's real magic in this story. So let's start at the end rather than starting at the beginning. Here we are a few years after Debbie's transition last year, and you get a magical call from your dear family friend, James von Prague. What message did he have for you?
Well, James had called to tell us that he had recently moved to San Diego, and he wanted my husband Brian and I and my mom to come see his new home. And while we were going to do that, he would give us a reading with Debbie. And of course, we said no, right?
Yeah. James von Prague offers a reading? Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah, because he doesn't do private readings anymore. So it's like, yeah, sure, can't wait. So he lives about 45 minutes north of us. So we drove up there and got a tour of his gorgeous resort like property. And then we sat down in his office and to do this reading with Debbie, and she came through instantly. And the very first thing she said was, "Ariel, you have to write a prayer book with me." To which I said, "No effing way. I don't want to write my own books, let alone write your books. I'm not going to do it." And she was like, no, you have to do it. You have to write a prayer book with me. It's like, Debbie, I'm not writing a prayer book with you. And then she gave us some more messages, and then Brian's parents came through, my dad and my stepdad came through, and various relatives. And every couple of minutes, Debbie would pop up with, "Ariel, you have to write a prayer book with me." And I was like, "Forget about it, Debbie. It's not going to happen." And then at one point, James said to me, "Who's Minnie? She keeps talking to me about Minnie." And I said, "Well, pretty much nobody knows this, but Bo, Debbie's son, has a half-sister named Minnie. And Minnie's not even her real name. That's just what we call her." And he goes, "Okay, that makes sense. She's saying that she wants you to tell Bo that when he was with Minnie, she was there too." Now, what was really crazy about all this is that Minnie lives in London. And she had just happened to be in San Diego the week before to visit Belle. So I was like blown away. It's like, oh my God, James is even better than I thought he was. He's so amazing. So the reading's going on and on and on. And Debbie's still hawking me, "You got to write a prayer book with me." And finally, I realized that she was not going to let the session end until I agreed. And I just said to James, I don't know how we're going to do this. You're going to probably have to help me. But yes, Debbie, I will figure out how to write a prayer book with you. So we're driving home and I'm like tortured. It's like, oh my God, how are we going to do this? And Brian says, you know, I spent so much time with your sister driving her to her doctor's appointments and her chemo appointments. And I remember her telling me that she wrote some prayers. Why don't you call Julie and see if Julie has copies of any of them? Now, Julie was Debbie's right hand everything, the CEO of her institute, her caregiver at the end of her life, you know, just everything. She's like family to us. So I get home and I write Julie this really short email that says, hey, Jules, do you have copies of any prayers that Debbie ever wrote? And she writes me back and she says, oh, I can do even better than that. She wrote an entire book on prayers called Your Holiness. I've attached it. So I'm now freaked out and blown away because I've been her one and only literary agent. How is it possible that my sister wrote a book that I knew nothing about? Anyway, I open up the manuscript. I sit there for 2 hours reading every page. It is the best thing she's ever written. And I'm blown away. So then I pick up the phone and I call her editor at Harper One, Gideon Weil. And he's not only her editor, he's my editor. He's James von Prague's editor. He's Deepak and Marianne's editor. And I start to say the word prayer to Gideon and he stops me. And he says, oh my God, Ariel, he goes, for the last 4 years, I've been feeling so guilty. Your sister always wanted to write a prayer book. And I always dissuaded her not to do it. I told her she needed to stay in her own lane and not to write a prayer book. I said, okay, Gideon, well, you can stop feeling guilty right now. Check your inbox. I just sent you the book. Well, within days, Harper One bought the book. And all I had to write was a 5-page foreword that describes the story I've just shared. And the book is now on sale.
That's an amazing story. And obviously, you guys led magical lives. And maybe now that you've got that out, let's talk about the magic that led up to this point and the continuing magic. Please share your early memories of Debbie. What was she like as a child?
Well, she was a fat little thing. Even though she grew up to be a scrawny, skinny string bean, she was a tubby little toddler. And her nickname was Sarah Bernhardt because she was always a drama queen. She was always making a fuss. And as she got to be about 4 or 5 years old, she became the leader of the pack in the neighborhood. Debbie was like the Pied Piper. Wherever she went, all the other little kids wanted to follow. So she was always very engaging and fun to be with and funny and stubborn and difficult, but very cute, really cute. Like, she was my favorite toy until she got to be very verbal, at which point we actually fought a lot.
And what was your relationship like as teens?
Not good. She was 3 years younger, and she always wanted to hang out with me and my friends. And, of course, we didn't want her anywhere near us. So I was always locking her out of my room. And she would do things like she would borrow my clothes. And because she was so much skinnier than me, she would sew my clothes to fit her. She would wear them. And then she would put them back in my closet without letting the new seams out. So I was always having a hard time getting dressed because I didn't know what she had messed with. And, you know, every once in a while she would like kick down my bedroom door because she wanted to get in. So we did not really get along too well when we were teenagers.
Did she show any signs of any interest in spirituality at a young age?
Zero. None. No, she was a party animal, and she liked to get dressed up and go to nightclubs. And as young as the age of 12, she was doing drugs and hanging out at nightclubs. So she had a wild and crazy life.
That's amazing. Now, you said if you had to describe Debbie in one word, that word would be seeker. What were the different stages of seeking in her 20s, for example, 30s and 40s?
Well, the seeking part started after she got sober. So she was a drug addict for about a dozen years. And when she was in her late 20s, she went to a variety of treatment centers. And the first three didn't work at all. She went, you know, she'd get there for about 10 days, start to feel pretty good, realize that she didn't think she needed any more treatment or that she should be hanging out with the losers in the treatment center, and she'd check herself out. But when she got to the fourth treatment center and she got to day 10, she realized by that point that if she didn't stick it out, if she didn't stay, she was going to die. She was doing so many drugs. In fact, what got her into that fourth treatment center was that she had bought a bottle of 1,000 Percodan.
Oh, my God.
And a little more than a week, all the Percodan were gone. And she said she was so embarrassed and ashamed that she'd done so many drugs that she didn't even feel good about calling the drug dealer to get more Percodan because she couldn't believe the quantity she was doing. And that's when she checked herself into treatment center number 4.
Well, let's take a break now, and then we'll continue to talk about Debbie's early life and her struggles. I'm speaking with Arielle Ford, the sister of Debbie Ford, and we're talking about her magical book that Arielle found out about last year and brought to fruition, Your Holiness, after these words from the Om Times Radio Network.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Alaya, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Join me, Maggie Chula, on Mondays at noon Eastern for Mastermind with Maggie. Let's work together in a mastermind. We can resolve life's problems and create goals for the future. Build action steps empowering you to create your life in partnership with your divine source of light, your soul. Manifesting your goals can be simple and easy, so come with your problems and leave with a plan. The Akashic Master Teachers and I are waiting to help you.
You wanted to see me?
Yes, please, have a seat. So here's the thing. When this company brought you on, we took a chance on you. You didn't have that 4-year college degree we typically look for.
Right.
But we gave you a shot anyway. And since then, you've worked incredibly hard and given it your all.
Thanks.
You've been an important asset to the team, but I don't think you can be an intern here anymore. We want to hire you.
You're serious?
Absolutely.
Find your next great employee. Introduce yourself to the grads of life. Who are they? Talent worth knowing about. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
I won't let you down.
I know.
Don't miss out on a resource many innovative companies have already discovered. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening is Arielle Ford, the sister of Debbie Ford, and we're talking about this amazing book that came through Debbie after her transition called Your Holiness. So you were talking about Debbie's struggles with drug addiction, and you said when she got to the fourth center, there was a transition for her.
Yeah, so when she got to day 10, which was usually her day to bolt treatment centers, she locked herself in the bathroom of the center and got down on her hands and knees, in spite of the fact that the floor was filthy and stinky and she was a clean freak, and just began to cry hysterically and to beg God for help to find a way to stick it out and get clean and sober so that she wouldn't die young. And while she was praying, she had an awakening. And for the first time, she began to feel a sense of peace and a sense of possibility. And she said even a little joy and excitement that she could make it through one more day. And that was really the beginning of her seeking. That was the start of her path to sobriety, which altered the course of her life.
What was her relationship with God prior to that moment?
Well, you know, I don't really know. We never talked about it. You know, we were raised Jewish in a conservative synagogue. So we went to Hebrew school. We got bat mitzvahed. We went to high holy day services, which we tried to sneak out of as much as possible. Debbie liked being Jewish. She liked the rituals. She didn't mind it so much. I consider myself a gastronomic Jew. I'm only in it for the food. I describe myself as a Jewish, Christian, Hindu, Buddhist, pagan, not necessarily in that order. But as Debbie got older and got more on her path, she really embraced Judaism. And every Friday night she would light the Sabbath candles, and she became very close to a Chabad rabbi after she had her son, and actually took him on a trip to Israel with her and 200 other people maybe 9 months before she died.
So she's finished with, or she's recovering from her drug addiction, and what happens next? What's next on her path?
Well, Debbie had dropped out of high school. So as she was really starting to explore what it would be like to be sane and emotionally healthy and healed from addiction, that was about the time I had discovered Deepak Chopra's work. So we're talking maybe 1990, 91, and I was sharing information with her, Deepak tapes and Wayne Dyer tapes, literally those cassette tapes. And she decided to get her GED and then go to college. And she got a degree from JFK University in transpersonal psychology. And I remember her telling me one day, about 3 years into her sobriety, that she now understood that the body was capable of fully healing from just about anything. You know, if people could have terminal cancer and then come back and go into total remission and their cells could be healed, why couldn't that also be true for addiction? And she said that, you know, she would go to these NA meetings and stand up and say, "Hi, my name's Debbie, I'm a drug addict." And it was starting to feel inauthentic. And so she loved the 12-step programs and what they had given her thus far. But she said she wanted for herself to discover the 13th step, and what would that be? And while she was at university, she was studying the work of Carl Jung and discovered what he had to say about the shadow, or what she liked to call the dark side, to find the gifts and embrace all the negative emotions of anger, fear, guilt, shame, everything, and what could that possibly mean for her life, while she was simultaneously learning to embrace her good qualities, her light side, her loving, generous, compassionate nature. So this became the basis of what she was interested in for her own self-healing. And at that time, she was working, and her work was that she did witness prep. Trial consultants would hire her to spend time with their clients that needed to go on the witness stand and show up as believable and authentic. And Debbie had a real knack for transforming them. So that was her day job. And at night she was going to, you know, school, and she was studying every kind of self-help thing known to man, and really dedicated to healing herself physically, emotionally, psychologically, and spiritually.
Now, in her Dark Side of the Light Chasers, her groundbreaking first bestseller, she wrote about that process of unmasking and embracing our shadow selves. How did she do that with her own shadow?
Well, the first shadow she embraced was when she was taking a leadership and speaking workshop. And the instructor said, Debbie got up and spoke, and then the instructor said to her, Debbie, you know, you're a real bitch.
Wow.
And Debbie was thinking to herself, well, I know that, but how does she know that? And that was the first shadow piece that she wanted to embrace. And Debbie was really ashamed that this woman had called her out in front of the whole class and said she was a bitch. And then the instructor said to her, well, can you see that there's anything positive about being a bitch? Like, what are the benefits? And as Debbie thought about it, one of her other jobs was she liked to flip houses. She was great at remodeling houses. And she said, well, it's really a benefit when the contractors and the workmen aren't doing their job that I can go in there and be a bitch and call them out and light a fire under them. That's, you know, that's a real benefit of being a bitch. And the instructor said to her, yes, yes, it is. So you can actually find a way to find all the gifts of being a bitch and embrace that. And then when you're speaking, we see the fierce part of you that's so useful, but we don't see sort of the nasty, angry bitch part of you that is what we're seeing now. So that was like step one on the path for her.
Mm. A lot of people are scared of the shadow. How did she become so comfortable that she was able to assist others in embracing it?
I think because she found that it worked, and she found fun ways to make it an enjoyable process. So for instance, I don't remember the name of the Italian psychologist that she studied, but it was somebody who had done pioneering work around subpersonalities. And Debbie would create these processes where you could get onto a bus, and everybody in all the seats of the bus were your various subpersonalities, and you could go and give them, you know, you could go have a conversation with them, and then you could give them nicknames. So you could have one that might be named, you know, Bertha the Bitch, or Hateful Hannah, or Angry Annie, or Compassionate Carly. And you could see that all of these parts of yourself were there to assist you, that there was something good about every part of you, whether it would appear negative or positive. And so by making it fun and finding the gifts, she was able to do it. Now, the strange part of all of this is as she was synthesizing this work and originating it, I was her sole guinea pig. And I didn't like being her sole guinea pig, but that's who she would choose to work on. And I remember going to Book Expo America in Chicago, because back in those days I was a book publicist. And I had a stalker, and the stalker showed up in Chicago at the expo, and I got totally freaked out, and I called Debbie from my hotel, and I said, oh my God, she's here, she's stalking me. And Debbie said, okay, we're going to fix this. She said, go into the bathroom and stand in front of the mirror, and I'm on the phone with her doing this, and she said, okay, what's the number one word that comes to mind when you think of your stalker? I said, oh, she's evil. And Debbie said, okay, she's evil. Now, she represents a part of you that's evil. And I said, oh, Debbie, I'm not evil. Nobody would ever agree with you that I'm evil. She goes, no. All of us have the ability to be everything, and there's some evil part of you. And until you own it, she's going to keep showing up to reflect your evilness back to you. And so she had me talking to myself in the mirror saying, I'm evil. I'm a nasty, wicked, evil person. I'm really evil. And I could see that, you know, sometimes I did have evil thoughts, even though I would never call myself evil. And by the time we were done with it, I was actually laughing. I could actually say, oh, I'm evil, and laugh about it. I could own it. Well, I want you to know, I went back to the expo next day, and the stalker wasn't there. Or if she was there, I didn't see her. And I never heard from the stalker again until about maybe 5 years ago. I was at a Hay House I Can Do It event. It was here in San Diego. And I was walking through the area where they had all the different vendors. And this woman walked past me, And she looked so familiar. And I just smiled at her. I couldn't remember who she was or what her name was, but she seemed familiar. So I smiled. And when I got 10 steps away from her, I realized it was my stalker.
But it wasn't that the credulity of that stalking was gone because you recognized that within yourself. God. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So over the, you know, as Debbie was developing this work, I had to embrace things like I was a angry, man-hating, overbearing bitch. Those were my first four things I had to embrace.
Not a lot.
Yeah. And then I also had to embrace that I was a deeply loving, caring, giving friend. So I had to embrace not just my dark side, but I had a hard time embracing my light side as well. You know, it was hard for me to, you know, look and see that I was this kind person because it wasn't something I had ever considered before.
And my wife, Lori Sue, and I are very fortunate to be one of your wonderful friends. My guest this evening is Arielle Ford, and we're talking about her sister Debbie's book, Your Holiness, Discover the Light Within. Arielle, please tell listeners where they can get the book and find out more about the story.
It's really easy. You just go to DebbieFord.com, DebbieFord.com, and you can buy the book there. You can sign up for her newsletters. Her work lives on through the Ford Institute. Her amazing transformative weekend workshop, The Shadow Process, is still available many times a year. So go to DebbieFord.com and you can get it all right there.
And we'll be back with more of Arielle and Debbie's book, Your Holiness, after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hi, this is Sylvia Henderson, intuitive life coach and energy healer. Are you ready to elevate and rise way above your normal? Be sure to listen to my show, Intuitive Transformations, on OM Times Radio, Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. Get the inspiration you need to transform your life.
More than 1 million wild animals are killed each year illegally. Poaching is a major threat to our country's wildlife. I'm Tom Barry. I'm an actor with a desire to preserve living space for wildlife. The Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust does just that. Works with private landowners to protect wildlife, to preserve natural habitats. To learn more or to work with the Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust, call 800-729-SAVE. That's 800-729-SAVE or visit wildlifelandtrust.org. Thank you.
Chris, you're not acting like a grown-up in our relationship.
M2!
There's your comic book collection, the race car bed.
I'm young at heart, but I put money into my 401k every paycheck. I'm taking control over my financial life, and that feels pretty grown-up to me.
Put away a few bucks, feel like $1 million. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org.
Are those footy pajamas?
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening, Arielle Ford, the sister of Debbie Ford, and we're talking about Debbie's book, Your Holiness, which came after her 4 years after her transition. So we're talking a little bit about the shadow work that Debbie did. And a lot of people, she helped hundreds of thousands of people transform their pain into their best possible lives. She really had a knack for helping people go beyond their limited perspectives of themselves, as you explained when you were talking about how she helped you deal with the concept of evil within you. Why do you think she was so masterful at what she did?
Oh, wow. You know, she was just born to teach. You know, she really saw what was possible in her own life, and she wanted to make sure that anybody else who wanted to be freed from the tyranny of their own critical mind that she knew she could help them. She had the tools, and she was not a kind or sweet teacher. She was rigorous. You know, she didn't put up with any BS. You know, she would really get in your face and tell you what was so. So if you wanted somebody who would gently hold your hand and go, there, you poor thing, Debbie was not your teacher.
Absolutely. I had the pleasure only of meeting her once when she was teaching here in New York several years ago. And I was really impressed not only with her ability to cut through the chase and get right to the heart of what happens inside of people, but also her warmth. She was a very warm woman.
Yes, she was warm, she was funny, she was friendly, but when she was teaching, you don't want to mess with her.
One of the things that about Debbie that many people may not be aware of was her great generosity. What are some of the remarkable things you remember about her giving nature?
Yeah, she was always giving everything, whether it was her clothes, her jewelry, her time, her energy. When Bo was about to be bar mitzvahed, in the past, what we had given him for his birthday was, you know, we'd go to heifer.org and buy him, you know, pay for a cow for a third world family, that sort of thing. And when his bar mitzvah was coming up, I said, you know, Heifer has this thing called the Ark. For $5,000, you pay for two of every kind of animal, and that's given to a community. Do you want to do that for your bar mitzvah? And he goes, well, let me think about it. This is from a 12-year-old, right? Mm. So then he says to me, he goes, you know what I really want to do? He said, I want to build a school in Uganda. I want to use my bar mitzvah as a way to raise money to build a school. Because at that time, Debbie and I were very involved with a startup nonprofit called Just Like My Child in Uganda. And we were raising money for hospitals and all kinds of stuff. And I thought, well, isn't that great? So between, you know, my existing circle of friends, Debbie's large platform and big circle of friends, and Bo's, $140,000 was raised, which was enough money to build 5 schools in Uganda.
Wow, wonderful. Such a wonderful story. That really shows the generosity that not only that Debbie had and you had, but it was passed on to Bo.
Yeah, it was incredible. And the schools are still there, and the first one is called Bo's School.
That's beautiful. You and Debbie used to have a website called Ford Sisters, and you were known as the Metaphysical Angels. What a wonderful title. You know, you sort of alluded to this before, but who led who on the path of enlightenment?
You know, it was really a joint process, because what Debbie, you know, was diving, was she in the 12-step programs then? Yeah. She was already sober at least a year when I moved to LA. And I was already interested in a lot of this stuff, but we were taking different paths, but we would often compare notes. So it was sort of a parallel track. She was in South Florida, I was in Los Angeles, and then we both moved to San Diego in 1994. And Deepak Chopra was sort of the catalyst for all of that, because Debbie moved because she had gotten married and her husband at the time, Dan, lived here in San Diego. I was working with Deepak and he had just moved to San Diego to open the first Chopra Center. So I was down here all the time until the point where I realized I should be living here too. And it was actually Deepak that gave her first big break, because I took Debbie to his house for lunch one day and he asked her, he said, well, what kind of work do you do? And she explained her witness prep work that she was doing and how she got people to transform and show up in a more responsible, cohesive way. And he said to her, he said, you know what, I have 12 people working for me right now that could really use this. Why don't you take them for a weekend and let's see what happens? And so Debbie made up this course and she presented it to his staff for a weekend. And on Monday morning, he called her And he said, I don't know what you did to transform these people, but you need to give it a name and start teaching it here at the Chopra Center. Wow. And that was the start of her career.
Wow, that is such a wonderful story and a tribute and a testament to what Debbie brought when she was with people and worked with people and used her gifts and her skills and her hard-learned lessons to help transform others. You know, you've often said that Debbie wasn't just your little sister. You called her best friend, teacher, greatest supporter. And you also mentioned the times that she was your most difficult client to manage. What made her so difficult?
Well, she was completely, utterly unmanageable. So, you know, I'm a very organized person and I like things on a schedule and I'm always prepared in advance. Debbie was completely chaotic and disorganized and was a procrastinator and could never make a decision. So we were total opposites in that regard. So, you know, getting her to do anything was hard and, you know, and she didn't. She would always ask for advice, but she would never listen. And there were many times where, you know, I'm a little bit psychic. So I would see what was going to happen if she did certain things. And I would tell her, oh, please, please, please don't make a deal with that guy, John. If you do this deal with him, it's going to cause so much trouble and you're going to lose a ton of money. And I would go and tell John, please don't do this deal with Debbie. It's not going to work and it's going to cause a lot of problems between all of us because we were all friends. John's not his real name, by the way. Mm-hmm. And she didn't listen and he didn't listen and they both lost money and they were both disappointed and it did cause a lot of trouble. This happened multiple times. And finally, one day we were walking on the beach and I said to her, you know, I warned you about John, I warned you about X, I warned you about Y, and everything went the way I said it was going to go. How could I possibly talk to you in a way? What is it that I could say so that you would listen to me? And she just laughed. She just got hysterical laughing and she said, nothing, I'm never going to listen.
That's an amazing story. You know, you empowered her and she empowered you. How did she empower you to create your own path as a best-selling author, especially in the field of soulmates?
Well, you know, what happened was I had decided one morning when I was 43 years old that it was time for me to find my soulmate and get married. And I looked at my past and I saw how I'd created this hugely successful career and just decided to use every manifestation technique I knew to manifest a soulmate. And it worked. And as you know, worked really well. And one day I was on one of Debbie's cruises. She had, I think, 200 of her coaches. And she said, oh, I want my sister Ariel to come up on stage and share the story of how she manifested her soulmate. This is like completely out of the blue. So I stand up and I tell the story as best as I can remember it. I think I spoke for about 45 minutes. And when it was over, about 150 people rushed the stage saying, I want to do that. Where's the book? I need the book. I need to do that. And Debbie's like, yeah, you need to share this information. People want this. And I was like, oh my God, I don't want to write a book. Maybe I'll create an internet product. So I created this thing called the Soulmate Kit, which is no longer available. But at the time, it was a bunch of audios and a workbook, and it had step-by-step instructions for manifesting your soulmate. And eventually, Harper One saw it, and they said, hey, we'll give you a lot of money if you'll turn this soulmate kit into a book. So that was the genesis of The Soulmate Secret, which turned out to be a big bestseller in 40 countries and 21 languages, and still, thank God, continues to sell well today. So that was the start of my career.
That's wonderful. The way that you both empowered each other. This is really the story of two sisters who were a team, wasn't it?
Yeah, we just had sort of unusual ways. And what's really funny is that I had a book called Hot Chocolate for the Mystical Lover, 101 True Stories, How Soulmates Met and Married. that came out on the same day as Debbie's book, Spiritual Divorce.
Wow.
And at that point, which was, I don't even know how many years ago it was, but let's say it was at least 15 years ago, maybe more, we were on opposite ends of the spectrum of love. I was about finding love. She was about ending love. And now today, what's really happened, especially with the unearthing of her book, Your Holiness, and, you know, really being a prescriptive book to teach people how to connect to the divine and to their inner godliness and holiness, we're really talking about the same thing, but from different angles. Like, we're really much more in alignment now than we ever were in terms of our teaching.
Absolutely. You know, it's often the case that we have to learn how to let go of old relationships before we can forge new and beautiful loving relationships.
Yeah. I was texting with Marianne Williamson the other night, and I was telling her, now that Debbie's been out of her body for 5 years, that in so many ways we're closer than we've ever been. And she said, yes, she said, someone once talked to Yoko Ono about that. And Yoko said, when John was in his body, we were together 90% of the time. And now I have him 100% of the time.
What a beautiful thing to say. My guest this evening, Ariel Ford, sister of Debbie Ford. And we're talking about Debbie's final book, or maybe not final book, From Beyond the Grave, Your Holiness, Discover the Light Within. And we'll be back with more of Ariel after these words from the Om Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Are you in an interfaith relationship and thinking of getting married? For 18 years, Reverend Lori Sue Brockway has been creating personalized, loving, and romantic ceremonies for couples of all faiths and cultural backgrounds. Reverend Lori Sue's sensitivity to the needs of interfaith couples is reflected in the compassionate and inclusive way she addresses the concerns of parents and families. Reverend Lori Sue is also the author of several best-selling books on interfaith weddings and wedding vows. Selected as one of the top interfaith officiants by New York Magazine, Reverend Lori Sue serves couples in the New York metropolitan area and beyond. Find out more at her website, yourinterfaithwedding.com.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
You've accidentally cut your daughter's bangs unevenly. Do you A, line things up a centimeter from her hairline?
Man, oh man, oh man, oh man, oh man!
No, sweatbands are so hot right now. Everyone's wearing them, like that basketball player and that other basketball player.
B, get spiritual.
Mom, where did all the mirrors go?
A reflection could never capture our true selves.
Huh?
Beauty is within.
C, look on the bright side.
Less time blow drying, more time texting.
Or D, show empathy.
Mom, you really don't have
Ta-da! Twinsies!
I kinda love it. As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening, Ariel Ford, sister of Debbie Ford, and we're talking about Debbie's book, Your Holiness, Discover the Light Within. So Debbie fought this long and valiant battle with a rare form of cancer. In fact, when her doctor told her to get her affairs in order and prepare for hospice, she used some choice words to tell him what to do, and I'm not going to repeat them on the air, obviously. Please share memories of Debbie's path toward transition.
Yes. Well, she basically told the doctor, who said, you know, we're putting you in hospice. She said, F off. Nobody is going to tell me when I'm going to die. I never want to see you again. And she threw him off her team.
Wow.
And she went on to live 2.5 more years. And part of that was her pure stubbornness. Part of it was that Wayne Dyer took her to see John of God several times. Part of it was, she just wouldn't give up. So she did every experimental treatment that was available to her. She did all kinds of alternative and energetic work. I know, Vic, you did a lot of Reiki on her. She was open to all of that. And basically, she was, for those 2.5 extra years, was in this mode where she was either flat out running around teaching or flat on her back for 4 to 6 weeks recovering from teaching. But she just was relentless in her pursuit. And it wasn't until maybe 7 weeks before she actually died that she went into hospice, that she finally, when her doctor, who she loved so much, Dr. Marin, said to her, okay, we're at the end of the journey. Okay, this is the end. There's nothing more we can do. It's time to wrap your head around. The end is near. And I remember we were sitting in her hospital room and she was going, oh, this is just so heavy. Because she lived in this belief that there would be a miracle, that there'd be a miracle cure or a miracle healing, and that she wasn't going to really die. And now the person she trusted most in the medical community, who was also a very spiritual being, said to her, this is it. But she was funny as can be as she was on her deathbed. I remember I fell asleep in her bed one night and she couldn't move around very much. And I felt something poking me, and it was Debbie poking me saying, you're snoring, stop snoring. And I said, okay, I'll sit up. And then she said, come here, I have to tell you something. I was like, what? She said, take more vacations.
Sage advice.
Yes, take more vacations. And then, another day, she mostly slept at the end. She liked the room dark and quiet, and she was mostly sleeping. But she opened her eyes one morning, and she said, today's the day. I'm like, okay, Deb, it's cool. You can go. It's going to be great. There's going to be a big party waiting for you. And she smiled, and she went back to sleep. Couple hours later, she woke up and she goes, nope, today is not the day. and she was still a princess. Her facialist came every day. She had a once a week mani-pedi in her bed. At one point, 4 days before she passed, she had her dental hygienist cleaning her teeth. And at one time, she said to me, she had this really wicked smile on her face. She said, I really do enjoy all of this attention.
Mm, absolutely. I remember seeing her with Oprah Winfrey on Super Soul Sunday prior to her transition and sharing her life story and her experience in transition. How important was it for her to get this message out?
Well, she didn't want to, so she really kept it a secret how sick she was from as many people as she could. But of course, at that point, you could just look at her and know that she was very, very sick. But she didn't want to talk about it for a couple of reasons. One, she didn't want people feeling sorry for her because she was a teacher. She wanted the attention on them, not on her. And also, she didn't want that energy coming at her. So she was super secretive. And I was sitting at my desk one day and an Oprah producer called and said to me, well, Wayne Dyer has shared with Oprah what's going on with Debbie. And Oprah wants to know, would she come and talk to her about it and publicly share her story? I said, I don't know. Let me ask her. And we talked about it, and I said, you know, Debbie, you can't keep it a secret much longer. And if you're going to tell the world, is there any better way to tell the world than sitting under that oak tree with Oprah for Super Soul Sunday? So that's why she agreed to do it, that it might help somebody else, that somebody else could see that she could be in the condition that she was and not feel sorry for herself. Because that's one thing she never did. She never got into a pity party or poor me or why me. She just saw this as part of her path. And really, at the end of her life, she even said to me one day, she said, you know, this past year, even though I've spent most of it in bed and I spend my life in pain almost every day, she said, this has been the best year of my life. And I really feel like I have completed my mission.
That's an important point to make, that a lot of people look at someone who has done the work that Debbie has done and others who have done incredible work, and they face these daunting challenges in health and illness. And all of a sudden, they're transitioned, and sometimes very young, and sometimes we say way too early, but they've come to the realization that they've completed the mission in this lifetime, on this planet, in this realm, and it's okay to go on, isn't it?
Well, it's not only okay, but actually, as we can see from the publication of Your Holiness, the work has not ended.
Right.
It's just that there is more of her and more ways to reach more people, because I can't tell you how many of her friends, her coaches, her family, and mostly strangers share with me on a near daily basis that they hear Debbie, that they feel her guidance. I remember Cheryl Richardson telling me that Debbie came to her in a dream and really read her the riot act about something that was going on in her life and gave her transformative advice. And I know your wife, Lori Sue, has gotten those kinds of messages. And sometimes she whispers messages to me to give to other people. And I call them up and I say to them, I'm so sorry, I have to tell you this weird thing Debbie wants you to know. And then I tell them the weird thing and they go, oh my God, that's exactly what I needed to hear. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
So her worn out physical body is gone, but she is much more present than ever.
Absolutely. Lori Sue and I had the joy of attending the wonderful celebration of life that you created for Debbie based upon her wishes and plans prior to her transition. Please share with our listeners what that was like for you.
Oh my God, it was so incredible. There were 400 people in the room because that's all we could squeeze in there. And she had given me an extremely detailed outline of what she wanted, who she wanted to speak, what kind of food she wanted served. She wanted a gospel choir, including some of the songs she wanted them to sing. She gave me the venue. It was at Balboa Park here in San Diego. She told me who she wanted sitting in the family section with my mother. I mean, she was a perfectionist and she was a control freak. And so she, you know, gave me everything, which turned out to be such a blessing because there were so many people who wanted to do stuff and wanted to do more. And I didn't have to insult them. I just said, no, I'm sorry. This is what Debbie asked for. This is all we have time for. And I'm going to fulfill her wishes. The only thing she didn't tell me, the only thing she didn't dictate, is what I was going to wear. That was the one decision I got to make.
I remember you talking about that day. Let's share, what message does Debbie share with readers in Your Holiness?
That prayer can heal you. It can heal you physically, emotionally, spiritually, psychologically. It can heal you of addictions. And that it can be easy to do, and that it's not that hard. And the way she's written this book is all the chapters are really short. They're just a couple of pages. And it's filled with original prayers that she wrote, prayers by Emmett Fox and Marianne Williamson and Rumi. And it's sort of like, you know, if you're in a recovery program, this could be your add-on on how to stay inspired on a daily basis to heal whatever it is needs healing. And who doesn't need healing? All of us, you know, are plagued with the inner critical voice that says, you know, you're too old, you're too fat, you're too stupid, you're too this, you're too that, nobody's ever going to love you, you know, whatever that is. there's nobody walking on the planet, at least that I know of, that doesn't fight every day with that voice. And Debbie says that when you're praying and when you're focused on God, you can't be focused on anything else. Mm. So it's actually, you know, this balm for your soul to be connected to your own holiness.
Absolutely. Is Debbie continuing to work and seek from the other side?
Absolutely. I just had a reading with James the other day, and she was trying to explain that she's learning all these new things, and she's not just in heaven, but she's in other dimensions, and she has new understandings. And we talked about what she's learned about prayer and what she's learned about love since she passed. And one of the things we're going to be offering book buyers is a 30-minute video of this interview that I did with her via James, where she talks about all of this. So that will be available at debbieford.com for book buyers.
And what's next for Arielle Ford?
You know, my focus right now is just making sure everybody who is out on the planet knows about this book. So it's really been fun connecting with people and letting them know about that. I'm not much of a long-term planner, so I would imagine there's new stuff coming. But, you know, I'm easy to find. I'm at soulmatesecret.com, and I have lots of freebies on there for anybody who wants to know about finding love or keeping love. And so that's what I'm up to, just teaching when and where I can.
And Lori, Sue, and I love you and love your beloved soulmate, Brian. And thank you so much for joining me this evening.
Oh, thank you for having me on your show. I'm very excited to be with you.
And Debbie's great book, Your Holiness, is available now. Your Holiness, Discover the Light. Arielle, one more time, where can listeners get the book?
DebbieFord.com.
Arielle, a big hug to you and Brian. We love you. We hope to see you again very soon because we love California. We love you guys. And we need to spend more time on vacation, as
yes.
she told you, spend more time
yes.
on vacation. And we're going to see you real soon. And thank you all for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.